All right, it looks like we're back online here. League of Pissed Off Voters every Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Mutiny Radio. This is DJ Spider with you. Here's the theme song. And, of course, let's try that again. Here's the theme song.
For years on end, people start to see our pissed off voter guide and feel like, oh, I trust those people, and I'm a pissed off voter too. There's a lot of bullshit out there. It's just straight up, there's a lot of institutional racism.
With all due respect, fuck the Chronicle and the Examiner.
There's a lot of local politicians that we don't like and that we actively campaign against that have a hell of a lot better politics than Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton.
You got people that have never felt the pull, just, you know, just jumping out of their pants to get involved.
Can you see and or you feel they stuck the boxes? I'll put in super words. What you mean I'm pissed?
Let you know that with $80 million, you too can buy yourself a California election.
I'll put in super words. What can men all piss?
League of Pissed Off Voters, you vote fucker.
All right, League of Pissed Off Voters here on Mutiny Radio, broadcasting live on MutinyRadio.com, also on iTunes under the Eclectic tab of the iTunes Radio segment there. And this is DJ Spider with you here, League of Pissed Off Voters, every Friday, 6 to 8 p.m., broadcasting live from 21st in Florida. Come on down. The cafe is open for business, and the bacon maple lattes are flying off the shelves, as well as all of our other fine caffeinated and non-caffeinated drinks. And yeah, going to be talking with in just a few minutes here with independent journalist David Morse, who was covering the protests over at the BART station yesterday, and what sounds like just some more shady business from the BART police. And yeah, whatever you think of the protesters there, who were trying to, I believe, to not disrupt the station or service or commuters, still led to BART police shutting down the station and arresting people without warning and detaining journalists and just all kinds of shady business. So we'll be back to talk about that in just a few minutes. And yeah, looks like might not have time to do the news headlines. Maybe we'll get to the news headlines after that. And then also going to rebroadcast interview we did a few weeks ago with Gary Shee, reporter for the New York Times and the Bay Citizen, talking about the mayor's race here in San Francisco, among other things. So, let's see. And, yeah, I got some tickets to give away. Going to do that in just a minute, but, yeah, maybe we'll do that right now. And, yeah, I noticed today is the birthday of soul R&B great Otis Redding, so thought maybe throw a little Otis Redding at you here to start off the show. And yeah, also let you know that if you want tickets to go see Ivan Neville's Dumps Defunk is playing next Thursday, September 15th at Great American Music Hall. And yeah, that's an all-ages show, I believe, over there at the Great American Music Hall next Thursday, Ivan Neville and Dumps Defunk. Just call up here, 415-550-0511. That's 415-550-0511, and I think we've got a couple pairs of tickets for that, so maybe we'll give away a couple of those if there's interest in the folks out there in the lines. And yeah, just call as soon as I get off the line here. And until then, let's see, where did I put that Otis Redding? Yeah, how about this one? This is off of Otis's Live at the Whiskey A Go-Go Volume 2 album, an original track by Otis Redding, Good to Me, on Mutiny Radio, League of Pissed Off Voters.
This is an original tune that we got together and do, you know? We did this tune about like 2 days ago, and we're gonna do it right now. This is an original tune, ladies and gentlemen. We got it. I don't you doing to me, honey, but it sure is good to me. I don't know what you got, baby, but it sure is good to me. I've been loving you for a long, long time, yeah, and it's still good to me. I've been loving you, woman, 20 long years, and I love you far and more, 'cause I've got that will to try. I remember those sweet kisses you gave me, honey, and they sure was good to me. That good, 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 good old loving you gave me, honey. Man, it was sure good to me. I've been loving you, woman, 20 long years. And I love you far and more, 'cause I've got that wheel to darling, the show was good to me. That good, good, good old loving you give me last night, honey, it sure was good to me. I've been loving you, woman, 20 long years, and I love you far and more, 'cause I've got that wheel to tread. Said I've been loving you all so long, baby, and I just love, love, love you, baby, more and more. And I'm gonna keep on loving you, baby, long. And I'm not gonna dissatisfy you in no kind of way. And I love, love, love you, yeah, baby. We're gonna drop the tempo down a little bit, ladies and gentlemen. We're gonna do a song that you never heard before. Says me.
All right, if you wanna hear that, we're gonna have to go get the album. Otis Redding, Good to Me, live at the Whiskey Go Go, Volume 2. And yeah, stay tuned just any minute now. Should be joined by David Morris on the phone talking about the protests at BART yesterday and what the BART police were up to. And I'm going to throw one more birthday tune at you. It's not his birthday yet, but coming up on Tuesday, it would have been Bill Monroe's 100th birthday, the godfather of bluegrass music. And yeah, I'm going to throw some old school bluegrass at you here. This is Bill Monroe's track, What Would You Give in Exchange for Your Soul, on League of Pissed Off Voters Radio, mutinyradio.org.
Brother afar from a savior today, risking your soul for the things that decay. Oh, if today God should call you away, what you give any change for your soul? What would you give
in exchange?
What would you give
in exchange?
What would you give any change for your soul? Oh, if today God had told you away, what would you give any change for your soul? Mercy is calling you, won't you give me? Must the dear Savior still tenderly plead? Risk not your soul in it precious indeed. What would you give any change for your soul? What would you give
in exchange?
What would you give
in exchange?
What would you give in exchange for your soul? Oh, if today God had called you away, what would you give in exchange for your soul? More than the silver and gold of this earth, more than all jewels a spirit is worth, God the Creator has given it birth. What would you give any change for your soul? What would you give
in exchange?
What would you give
in exchange?
What would you give in exchange for your soul? Oh, if today God had called you away, what would you give in exchange for your soul?
Bill Monroe on League of Pissed Off Voters Radio with What Would You Give in Exchange for Your Soul? And yeah, next Tuesday would have been Bill Monroe's 100th birthday. So next Tuesday, raise a glass for Bill Monroe, the godfather of bluegrass music. Before that was Otis Redding with Good to Me. And this is League of Pissed Off Voters Radio every Friday, 6 to 8 p.m., talking about local San Francisco politics and culture. And joined now on the phone by independent journalist David Morse. Hey, David, can you hear me?
Yep, I'm here.
All right. Thanks a lot for joining us. So,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for jumping on short notice. So you write for Indie Media, is that right?
Yes. The SF Bay Area Independent Media Center at indiebay.org. I've been reporting for them since maybe early 2004, something like that.
Okay. And you spent a lot of time covering BART issues, is that right?
Yeah, I have over the last 2 years. I covered the very first demonstration on January 7th, 2009, and just kind of dove into it from there when I saw, you know, I wasn't happy with a lot of the corporate coverage that was out there.
Right. And so you were at the protest yesterday at the Powell Street station, right?
Yes, I was. I was covering the demonstration, and I was arrested. I was put out by Deputy Chief Dan Hartley for arrest. And it was very surprising to me because he knows me very well. He knows what I do. I mean, I can understand he's not happy with what I do, but, you know, he knows I'm a journalist. And, I was the first one arrested yesterday. He pointed me out to a line of riot cops behind him. The first cop behind him grabbed me. Dan and I, we usually, have a little short conversation at demos sometimes. He's seen me at, 100 different board meetings or subcommittee meetings. You know, I go to the most boring meetings sometimes and record them just so that
right.
There's some sort of public record out there and people can know what's going on with the agency.
Well, I'm sorry, so we you cut out there for a second. Who is it? It was a deputy chief that...
Dan Hartwig.
Uh-huh. And who is he?
I'm sorry?
And who is he? He's with the BART police?
He's the deputy chief of the BART police department. He was a commander. I think he was, somewhat recently, maybe in the last year, promoted to deputy chief.
Wow. And so he specifically pointed you out to the cops and for arrest?
Yeah, the demonstrators were just kind of in a circle in the free area where they were saying for the last month that that's the acceptable area to have free speech. There's no free speech on the platform, they've been saying, which, is wrong.
Right.
They've been saying. So demonstrators were just marching around and chanting the free area, the non-paid area, the free speech area. And then they just closed in without a dispersal order and detained people. Dan Hartwig assembled a line of maybe five or six riot police behind him and just sort of moved briskly into the circle and just started pointing people out. He was like, him. And every time he'd point somebody out, the cop, next in line behind him would grab that person and pull him out of the circle for arrest. And I was the first one he pointed out. I immediately objected to him. I was like, what are you doing, Dan? You know who I am, but then he was already moving on, going him to other people. And
wow.
So I was pulled out by this officer, and I was like, I'm a journalist, you guys aren't supposed to be doing this. The arresting officer, as soon as they pulled me into a back office, I had already had handcuffs on, he's like, you're dated, right? That's the name I publish on IndieDay, DAVE space ID, David.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah. So, he knows who I am. The BART police know who I am. I'm on relatively friendly terms with a number of the BART board directors. For instance, last Friday, I was at their new police civilian review board. That's supposed to be their police oversight board that was set up after the murder of Oscar Grant. And a board... the full BART board president, Bob Franklin, was there, and he told me, I read everything you write about BART on IndieBay. I'm sure he's not happy about it, but, he reads it, so.
Right, right.
They all know clearly who I am.
Wow, so this is seems like a big change from previous protests. I mean, have you seen any other protests? It seems like were there other times when media have been brought in or been arrested?
Not that I'm aware of, not with BART police. One of the anonymous demos, maybe it was the 29th, there was people marching on the street, and there was a kettle in front of the San Francisco Public Library where, journalists and, anybody that was around, mostly it was people on the sidewalk already, but they just sort of kettled everybody. And then, one by one, they checked press credentials and let people go.
Right.
But this is the first time I've seen BART do that. They made more arrests yesterday than they've ever made. There's been protests in the past where people were holding it in train doors and so forth. And this one, basically, that people were just expressing their free speech rights exactly where BART said they were supposed to be doing it. There was no dispersal order. They did some strange things last night, too, where they cited some of the big corporate media people, like Vivian Ho from The Chronicle. She barely writes about it in her article today, just says they were briefly detained. Also, they ordered, they directed or misinformed SFPD. And SFPD, so they released the people that had San Francisco Police Department press passes.
Right.
I did not have one of those. But then... SFPD, who was down in the station as well, took those press passes from the journalist. So, they couldn't come back in, they couldn't report. I've talked to a couple of journalists today, and nobody's ever heard of anything like that. And I think that most of them probably got their passes back today, but I think it's a little bit of an embarrassment for SFPD because BART police apparently told them to take the press passes of people who had violated the law.
Huh.
And there was no violation of the law, so there's some strange stuff going on there, and, reporters aren't happy with BART. SFPD, I don't think, is happy about that. It's embarrassing to them. So it's kind of a mess. They're sort of losing their minds about these protests. They don't know what to do.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And I heard that there was some problem with getting comment from the official BART spokesman. I don't know if that was yesterday or today. Where the BART spokesman basically told the media that he was going off of duty and there was not going to be any word and for them to wait for a press conference. I don't know if you have any information on that or what your relationship is like with them.
I know that they had a press conference last night and they actually posted it to their BART TV web channel on YouTube. And I'm kind of almost surprised they put it up, because it's a really embarrassing one. They got asked really hard questions. Jim Allison, one of their press spokespeople, and Dan Hartwig, the deputy chief who pointed me out, did the press conference, and they both looked kind of sweaty and really nervous and were really tense with the reporters. You know, at one point, Dan Hartwig is like, get back. You know, And he's giving this order to journalists like he's, you know, dealing with some sort of, I don't know, terrorist threat or something, or, you know, just completely unruly protesters.
Right.
They can't really distinguish between the two. I did talk to somebody who tried to speak with Jim Allison last night, and she, as a reporter, and she told me that he basically wouldn't answer any questions. He said, we already answered questions at the press conference, so you just have to go to BART TV and see that press conference. And he wouldn't answer her questions. Primarily,
right.
She was pressing him about the lack of a dispersal order before they just swooped in and encircled about 30 people, 40 people. A third of whom were probably journalists.
Wow. That sounds like a pretty surreal scene, and yeah, I think it does definitely sounds like BART is kind of losing their shit a little bit on this whole thing.
They definitely are. They keep upping the ante. They don't know what to do. They're a public transit agency, and that's apparently it's a vulnerability for them. They don't know what to do. They refuse to make changes that the community has been demanding for years, and I don't know. They're just at wit's end, and they operate as if they're their own country. They're not accountable to the U.S. Constitution, and they're just doing what they want. They're making it up as they go along.
Yeah, pretty frightening. And do you get any kind of sense of where the leadership is coming on these things for the police or for the media relations?
Well, I mean, Bob Franklin has been making a number of statements around. We need to go to Sacramento and up the fines for protesting, to discourage protesters because they're getting off too easy. But really, generally, the way BART runs, though, is the board, the elected board, is pretty ineffectual and not really a part of the day-to-day operation. Most of them are part-time.
Right.
The only one that's not part-time is the president of the board. And so they really just sort of rubber stamp things and sign off on the big important documents and decisions, purchasing decisions, things of that nature. Occasionally give direction, but it's really this sort of insular administrative staff that runs everything, and that's why you've got people like Lynton Johnson making embarrassing statements. You've
right.
got the general managers and the police chief that cover up for BART police violence. Because they're sort of on their own. There's not really accountability built in, and I think that's part of the demand around disbanding BART Police, because the way their structure is set up, there really can never be accountability.
Yeah, it does seem like a really troubling situation that just seems to be devolving in front of our eyes in the recent months. And this is League of Pissed Off Voters Radio. We're talking with independent journalist David Morris, who's been covering BART issues for a while and was detained by BART police at the protest yesterday at the Powell Street station. So, David, what's sort of next on the BART calendar? Are there any other board meetings or committee hearings or protests coming up?
Well, they had a board meeting on Thursday. I did not attend that one because I don't think there was anything related to the police on the agenda, and that's the primary angle that I've been covering at BART.
Uh-huh.
So the next one would be 2 weeks from now. So it's not posted yet. So you have to check the, you can go to BART's website and click on About Us, I think, and then, find the meeting schedules and agendas.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll probably be in 2 weeks. And I can imagine that they're going to be getting an earful during the public comment in the next meeting. I believe that Anonymous has called for, they're calling their operation Op BART.
Right.
With the hashtag, and they communicate on Twitter about that. I believe they've called for another one on Monday.
Hmm.
But, it being anonymous, it's a little hard to tell.
Right.
What exactly will happen. The one on Labor Day was rather small. So I don't know if that was because it was Labor Day or people are kind of not feeling the anonymous call demonstrations. I'm not sure.
Right.
So those are the only two things that I know that are coming up at this point. But, you know, I'm sure there'll be more demonstrations.
Yeah, and then on the larger issue of sort of the BART police reform, you know, I have to admit I haven't been following that as closely as I would have liked to. And you could give us sort of a rundown on what's happened with, you know, the sort of the new Citizen Oversight Board. And I know there is talk of state legislation about reforming the oversight or reforming the BART police. And is there anything in the works on police reform, or is the BART police basically set as they are these days?
Well, they did form the Citizen Review Board.
Right.
And there's also an independent auditor. The process for that whole thing was screwed up, and it's all documented at you can go to indybay.org, that's indybay.org/Oscar Grant, all lowercase, and find a pretty incredible archive of coverage of the last 2.5 years of the struggle for justice at BART. Excuse me. And so it was kind of fixed from the beginning. There was a subcommittee set up from the BART board, and the subcommittee was tasked with creating citizen oversight. But community members were, you know, involved supposedly. You know, they cared about, because this was set up, you know, in response to the murder of Oscar Grant, because they knew that their police force was out of control. There was the Noble report, the Myers-Navé report. And both of those documented just incredible things that you almost wouldn't even believe were going on in their police department.
Hmm.
And so during this process, you know, it was supposed to be a public process with community involvement. These things just came and slipped into it out of nowhere. I think it was from Director Keller, and he suggested that it actually slipped into the language of it before it was even discussed, that one of the members on this supposed civilian review board would be appointed by the BART police unions.
Hmm.
That makes absolutely no sense to me. You know, why would you have a police appointee on this board, you know?
Right,
it's so
right.
That they can have an... I mean, it makes sense for the police, but it doesn't make sense for police accountability.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the process, there was an agreed-to version that would have actually made it a pretty strong board, where the civilian review board would have been able to go above the head of the police chief, to go above the head of the general manager. Those are the people that really run the show.
Hmm.
All the way up to the elected BART board with complaints and requests for discipline. That was what the community saw. That was what BART said they were going to do. The BART board voted on that version. But then there was a backroom deal made between BART and PORAC. They're the Police Officers Research Association of California.
Okay.
And basically they stripped out the 2 or 3 sentences that they gave the Civilian Review Board, you know, essentially the power to discipline officers.
Of course.
So that pretty much stripped away the teeth. And then it was that version with the backroom deal with PORAC was passed on to the state legislature, who passed it because they knew BART needed some sort of oversight. So now they've got a pretty toothless operation. And They just came into being this year, and they're really moving pretty slowly. There's been almost nothing about the murder of Charles Hill. They did have a hearing on the or a meeting about the shutting down of cell phones. Most of them seemed to think it was relatively okay. So at this point, I'm not really expecting anything from them.
Wow. So the oversight board thought that didn't have a problem with the cell phone service shut off in the BART station?
No, there was only one member who was objecting to that.
Huh.
The rest of them seemed to feel like, well, our job is, because the main elected BART board tasked them with looking at it and making recommendations, trying to get their involvement. And most of them just where, you know, they would say, oh, yeah, okay, well, it's obvious it should really just be done in times of, like, you know, actual imminent threat of life, you know, loss of life to
right.
passengers or whomever. But then they kept coming back to, well, if people are disrupting trains, that's a pain in the butt. And so essentially they were, you know, they just rationalized what BART has already done, which
yeah.
is the same thing BART's legal counsel has done, is they've not backed down either.
Huh.
And nobody at BART has really admitted that yes, you know, they need to talk to the governing authorities, the CPUC in California and the FCC in the U.S.
Right.
In the U.S., who, you know, if they want to do something like that, they need permission from those governing bodies. But Bart operates and somewhat seems to believe it's its own country and can do what it wants. You know, they can declare where the Constitution and the First Amendment apply and where they don't apply, and it's crazy.
Yeah, definitely a crazy situation. And didn't the BART Board of Directors, when they discussed the cell phone policy, come to a more, like, wanted to see a more restrictive policy? I had heard that.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me? Hey, David, are you there? Oh, might have lost him. Hey, David.
Hello?
Hey, I think we got you back. I don't know if you can hear me. I think we got you. Oh, looks like we might have lost him. Hey, David, I don't know if you're there. Maybe we could...
Yeah, I can hear you now. I lost you there for about 30 seconds or something.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think we're back with you. So, yeah, I was asking about what the BART Board of Directors, what their position was on this cell phone service shutoff. I thought that they had come down on a sort of more restrictive policy on that, sort of closer to what the ACLU was asking for. Is that what happened?
More or less. You know, they kind of want to have it both ways. They want to say, okay, we all support the First Amendment, and, you know, we respect the law and understand that we need to contact the CPUC and the FCC if we do something like this. But at the same time, it's not really believable how much, you know, faith they put in operating within the law. They say they're going to make a more restrictive policy. The one suggested by the... by their general counsel basically says the same, justifies it in the same way. If there's a disruption of service, that, you know, BART service, apparently meaning, you know, people holding open train doors or something like that, mm-hmm. that would justify it again.
Mm-hmm.
So more or less they're sticking by their guns. I don't expect, unless some outside authority holds them accountable,
yeah.
I don't really expect things to change a whole lot. I mean, I think they've learned their lesson, that they're not going to go doing this willy-nilly on, like, rumors of a protest again.
Right.
Like they did on August 11th. But, you know, what's in writing, they believe they can give themselves authority to do anything they want. And that's the problem.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, it's a pretty crazy world there underground at San Francisco. It's, yeah, like you said, it does seem to be their own entity down there, and without a whole lot of recourse. And I don't know, what do you have any thoughts on what's the best way to bring some accountability to BART? Is it continued protests?
Well, unfortunately, I think it's, you know, with, like, some of the arrests and things, like my arrest, you know, their mistreatment of journalists, their mistreatment of protesters who are exercising their free speech rights. Some of that's probably going to come down to civil suits and class actions.
Right, right.
Because I think they sort of know that. They're trying to do whatever they can do. They don't care if it's illegal or not to tamp down on this protest movement. And, you know, and they're taking the tack, well, we'll let the courts sort it out.
Hmm.
So, you know, some of it might come down to that.
Right.
You know, the protesters are demanding that the BART police force be disbanded. But that doesn't take a definitive shape as far as, you know, would it be other police forces that, you know, that step in and cover it? Does that mean just, you know, disarming the BART police force?
Right.
So that essentially they're security guards and, you know, you just take away their guns, they would just have a radio to call in other forces?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there was actually a danger to life or something of that nature?
Right.
You know, and then there's just the general demand for accountability. You know, and sometimes that's hard because two of the officers that were egregiously violent and rude and racist to Oscar Grant and his friends the night he was killed, they're back on the force. The officer who shot Charles Hill in about 24 seconds after having arrived on the platform,
right.
He has been hired by the FBI.
Right.
So they're sort of all in it a little bit together. You know, and it doesn't look like, you know, the two police officers that were involved with the Charles Hill shooting in Civic Center Station on July 3rd, they were cleared and back on duty in 3 days. So that sort of tells you where the agency looks at it. I don't know if the San Francisco DA is going to do anything. I don't really know what more they would have to investigate at this point, but it seems like they're just waiting for time to evolve or elapse so that they can come out and just say, oh, everything's all good, don't worry about it.
Huh.
Because they've finished interviews with all the witnesses. You know, they've got the little bit of videotape that Bart said they had. And, you know, I don't really understand what else there would be to investigate on that.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a pretty sobering picture you paint. And, yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll just have to see if the courts bring any accountability or if there's continued protests or action at the BART board. But, yeah, it definitely seems like a runaway situation down there. But,
It is, you know. And activists and protesters are, you know, they're putting themselves on the line. You know, they're taking arrests in greater numbers now to try and force the agency to change its ways.
Yeah, and I don't know if you talk with any of the protesters or organizers. It seemed like, you know, on Thursday there was this concerted effort to protest in a way that wasn't going to disrupt the commutes, that wasn't going to disrupt the station, and create the backlash of people being upset at the protesters. And yet it sounds like BART willfully shut down the station anyway. Do you think that was an attempt to discredit the protesters? And, you know, what's the tactic next?
I think so. I think, you know, part of it is A, to just keep trying new approaches, you know, and to just keep, you know, yeah, testing BART.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of it is, you know, to sort of put the onus back onto BART, because in July, demonstrators were, you know, holding open doors on trains and delaying trains.
Right, right.
But through all the anonymous protests in August, nobody was really doing that. It was all just about, you know, free speech and being able to speak up on a platform and hold a protest sign on a platform.
Yeah.
So I forgot where I was going. I apologize.
Yeah, I guess we're, you know, talking about how the protesters, you know, react to BART.
Oh,
looking to,
yeah,
for
yeah.
An excuse
so
to shut
you know,
down.
It's just sort of also they're just like testing new ground. You know, BART says, okay, you can speak here. You know, and they had shut down all these stations throughout August, basically just to squelch free speech.
Right.
And I think there's also an ulterior motive where BART is deliberately trying to upset commuters, and they're saying it's the protesters'
fault.
It's the protesters' fault. We had to close the station because of safety reasons. There were no safety concerns. So BART's been trying to pit the passengers against the protesters, you know, to take the heat off of themselves.
Yeah.
And I think this was an attempt to try and mix that up a little bit and to put the onus back on BART, because everybody was protesting exactly where BART said the free speech zone was, and they went and shut down the station anyway.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, pretty crazy scene all around, and it sounds like this thing isn't going away anywhere anytime soon. So.
I don't think so. There's some really committed activists who are not going to give up on this.
Yeah. Well, David, thanks a lot for joining us and all the insight on this. It's been really helpful to get a handle on the situation.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and if people want to check out your writing on Indie Bay, is there a place they can go to? Do you have a website or a directory?
Well, you can find the archive on BART specifically at indiebay.org/OscarGrant, all lowercase.
Okay.
And then otherwise, just check the Newswire.
Right.
I probably put up. On busy weeks, I might put up 3 or 4 posts under the nom de plume Dave Id.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I might go a week or more without publishing anything. But, yeah, just check the news wires and check out the site. And it's an open publishing site, so anybody can post to it. And there's a lot of great coverage that comes in from other people as well.
Okay, sounds good. So, yeah, that's indiebay.org/OscarGrant, all one word. And, yeah, thanks a lot, David. Maybe we'll get
you. I lost you again, didn't I?
Oh, well, I think we can still hear you if we lost you, but yeah, I guess. Are you there, David? Well, looks like we lost him. But yeah, anyway, David Morse, independent journalist with IndieBay.org, and thanks a lot for your insight, and maybe we'll get you in touch with you again down the line. This is League of Pissed Off Voters Radio every Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Mutiny Radio. I'm DJ Spider with you here on until the 8 o'clock hour. Going to take a break from all this and throw some music at you. And yeah, then I'm going to come back and I think we're going to, later on in the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to rebroadcast part of a conversation I had with New York Times and Bay Citizen reporter Gary Shee about the San Francisco mayor's race. And get to that in a little bit here. Meanwhile, I'm going to throw some music at you from artists that are going to be performing at the Harley Strictly Bluegrass Festival this coming, October 1st and 2nd, and I guess it's also extended on to Friday. I just found out today that it's going to be a freaking full-on three-day festival. The Friday day that's usually just a handful of bands is now going to be going from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. with four stages going. So it's the Harley Strictly Bluegrass Festival is continuing to grow and take over San Francisco. So let's see. Maybe I'll start on the more Hardly side of the bluegrass spectrum here. Here's one of the bands playing Gomez and something from their great album Bring It On. This is a track called Get Miles on League of Pissed Off Voters Radio.
Thank you. Extension is a cooperative do-it-yourself bike repair shop. They provide all tools and parts you need to fix or build a bicycle. A staff of volunteer mechanics is available to give advice and answer questions. Instead of charging fees, the Bike Kitchen charges membership dues that are $5 a day or $40 a year. If you're short on cash, you can earn a membership or parts by volunteering in the shop for a certain amount of hours. For more information, please go to bikekitchen.org.
This public service announcement is brought to you by Mutiny Radio.
Savochka on Mutiny Radio with All the Sand and All the Sea on League of Pissed Off Odors Radio. That's off their 100 Lovers album. And that was preceded by Gomez with Get Miles off their Bring It On album. And a couple of the hardlier, stricklier bluegrass bands, hardliest bluegrass bands. I don't know what the proper grammar is for that. They're going to be performing at the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival on the first weekend of October out there in Golden Gate Park. So, yeah, we'll get to a few more of those in a bit here. But, yeah, and get to the news headlines of the day, of the week here, and get a little instrumental Merman for you in the background. A live track from Maritime Hall back in 1997, February 28th in the Merman. This is Under the Cow Tree. And, yeah, just let them noodle around in the background here. So, yeah, great headline in the Bay Area Reporter this week. Wiener tackles Castro nudists. And article by Matthew Bacco goes on to say, the Castro's nudists will not be allowed in restaurants sans clothing, nor be able to place their bare bottoms on outdoor seating in public plazas under a new rule introduced this week. Openly gay District 8 Supervisor Scott Wiener, who represents the gayborhood at City Hall, submitted the proposed regulation at Tuesday's board meeting following the summer recess. It would require people over the age of 16 who are nude in public to place an item such as a towel underneath them when they sit down on shared seating, and would require nudists to don clothing before they enter a restaurant. Wiener said, San Francisco is a liberal and tolerant city, and we pride ourselves on that fact. Yet while we have a variety of views about public nudity, we can all agree that when you sit down naked, you should cover the seat, and that you should cover up when you go into a food establishment. The legislation does nothing to address growing complaints from some residents and merchants who want to see the nudists ordered out of the city's LGBT district. And reaction to the proposed rules has been mixed, with some expressing support and others dismissing it as wrong-headed. Nude men have been fixtures along the Castro sidewalks for years, if not decades, but they gained citywide notoriety after they began congregating and sitting in Jane Warner Plaza, the parklet at the corner of Castro and Market Streets. Police counter that unless a member of the public is willing to make a citizen's arrest, their hands are tied. Technically, being nude in public isn't a crime unless the person is sexually aroused. The proposed changes would make it an infraction for anyone exposing their genitals, buttocks, or anal region in an eating or drinking establishment whose primary purpose is to serve food. The rules appear to be written so as not to outlaw someone from, say, wearing assless chaps in a gay bar. So, some thought and care went into this ordinance. In a response to a question from the Bay Area Reporter, Wiener's office said that bars would be exempted from the rules. There, for example, should the policy be adopted in time for next year's Folsom Street Fair, someone attending the fetish event, naked or wearing assless chaps, could go to a bar that day, but they would have to cover up if they went inside a restaurant to eat, and they'd have to put a towel down if they wanted to sit in public, but they couldn't sit on the sidewalk because that's fucking illegal. Either way, clothed or unclothed, violators of either the sitting or restaurant clothing policy would be fined $100 for their first offense and $200 for a second incident within 12 months. Wiener's legislation is expected to go before the board's land use committee sometime in October. So, there you have it. And in other news, San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee faced criticism from some of his fellow mayoral candidates today following comments he made in praise of PG&E at a child literacy event. Lee was one of several city officials who attended the event at a park near Bessie Carmichael Elementary School. PG&E donated $250,000 to fund literacy instructors at the school, a move praised by the mayor during his speech, who called the utility, quote, a great company, unquote. City Attorney Dennis Herrera and Supervisor John Avalos were quick to pounce on Lee's comments today, citing its timing just days after the National Transportation Safety Board sharply criticized PG&E at a hearing Tuesday on the fatal pipeline explosion in San Bruno last September. Herrera and Avalos are both candidates in the November mayoral election, as is Lee, who was named an interim mayor in January after then-Mayor Gavin Newsom was elected lieutenant governor. Herrera said in a statement, quote, it shows insensitivity to victims' families and poor judgment for allowing his office to be used as the corporate PR tool. The interim mayor should reassess his laudatory view of PG&E and apologize to San Bruno's victims' families. Avalos said in the statement that he was, quote, frankly astonished, unquote, to hear of Lee's comments at Thursday's event, calling PG&E's contributions, quote, a symbolic donation to a charity at the height of their unpopularity. So, there you have it. And allow me to pause momentarily while I get over to another story. I'm going to check out something from Rebecca Bowe at the San Francisco Bay Guardian for her perspective on the protests over at the BART protest on Thursday. She was another one of the journalists who was detained there, along with David Morris, who we spoke to by phone earlier in the show. So. So here's Rebecca's Rebo's reporting on that, the San Francisco Bay Guardian. You can find this at sfbg.com/politics. And she says that a September 8 protest called to test the limits of the Bay Area Rapid Transit Agency's policies on freedom of speech inside BART stations ended in a cluster of protesters and journalists being corralled by nightstick-wielding BART officers, detained and in some cases arrested. The station was shut down at around 6 p.m. when police surrounded a group of demonstrators who had marched around the unpaid area of the transit station, as well as a group of media who were following them with cameras and video recorders. It was unclear at press time just how many arrests were made, but it is clear that things did not go as planned from the perspective of either the protesters or the transit agency. As the demonstration got underway, one of the No Justice, No BART protest organizers, Christopher Cantor, told reporters, quote, "We are here to test free speech limitations at BART, but more importantly, we are here to say we don't trust BART. We don't trust BART to protect us. We don't trust BART to interpret the Constitution." He also said that none of them were there to get arrested. Before the banners and bullhorns came out, BART spokesperson Jim Allison told The Guardian that if BART police deemed a gathering inside the unpaid area of the station to be dangerous, quote, "we would ask people to disperse, and if they did not disperse, we would declare an unlawful assembly." Allison said protesters were free to exercise their First Amendment rights to protest inside the areas of the station that don't require a ticket to enter. He said people could do that as long as they were not interrupting or interfering with regular service. When The Guardian caught up with Allison after the protest by phone to find out why his statements about the dispersal order were contradicted by police activity, he refused to answer our questions, directing us instead to watch a press conference on the BART website. "I'm going off duty," he said after calling The Guardian in response to a page, and a quote said, "I simply cannot devote the rest of my night to answering your questions." So things heated up when the protesters got closer to the fare gates, at which point police may have determined that the protesters were interfering with service. At one point, police tackled a masked demonstrator to the ground. However, when people were detained, they were not standing directly in front of the fare gates. Police did not make any public statements indicating that the situation had been deemed unlawful before surrounding the group of detainees, nor did they issue a dispersal order. We were told that we were not free to leave. While I was detained along with Luke Thomas, a reporter from the Fog City Journal, and freelance reporter Josh Wolf, an officer told us that we were being detained on suspected violation of California Penal Code 369-I, which prohibits interfering with the operations of a railroad. However, Matt Gonzalez, chief attorney with the Public Defender's Office, reported that that law contains an exemption for, quote, "there was an exemption to the law which, quote, does not prohibit picketing in the adjacent area of any property, unquote, belonging to a railroad." So it seemed that the protesters, along with more than a dozen journalists, were being unlawfully detained. When we put this question to one of the officers who stood holding a nightstick and blocking us in, he refused to address the issue directly, repeating that we weren't free to leave. So, yeah. Scary police state tactics going on down at the BART. And, yeah, I guess scary police state tactics and maybe a little bit of savvy PR tactics at closing the BART station unnecessarily to create more ill will towards protesters and deflect attention from the BART police's crazy ways. So, yeah, this is League of Pissed Off Voters Radio. I'm DJ Spider with you here every Friday, 6 to 8 p.m., talking about local San Francisco politics and culture. And I think I'm going to get back to some music here in a minute, take a little break with some more of the bands coming up, the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival, and then listen to a little bit of my conversation from a few weeks ago with Gary Shee of the Bay Citizen and the New York Times. First, how about another public service announcement?
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today.
This public service announcement has been brought to you by Mutiny Radio. The only place where the apocalypse is not happening.
Well, that's good to know. I didn't realize the apocalypse wasn't happening at Mutiny Radio. But as long as it isn't, you should come on down here at 21st in Florida in San Francisco's Mission District. And, yeah, we're here till 10 o'clock, I believe. This is League of Pissed Off Voters Radio. I'm going to fade out the Merman here and get more some of the getting a little closer to the bluegrass side of the Harley Strickley folks. But still, I don't know, a elbow length distance from it. Here's something from Jessica Lee Mayfield and her track Kiss Me Again on League of Pissed Off Voters Radio.
You got me where you want me, but I ain't all there. My head is gone, my brain is fried, and I'm standing right here.
Jessica Lee Mayfield on League of Pissed Off Voters Radio with Kiss Me Again. I'm going to throw one more track at you here before we get to that interview. But first, another chance for some tickets here. Got a pair of tickets to see the Stanton Moore Trio next Friday, September 16th at the Independent, along with the Shotgun Wedding Quintet, part of the Jazz Mafia, over there at the Independent on Divisadero 21 and Over show. And yeah, Stanton Moore, the drummer from the band Galactic, he's got a trio going on with Robert Walter and Will Bernard. Should be a good old hot time, jazzy New Orleans-y kind of sound. And, yeah, just give us a call here if you're interested in those tickets, 415-550-0511. That's 415-550-0511. And here's something from Justin Townes-Earl, who will be at the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival with a track called Walk Out off his Midnight of the Movies album. Justin Townes-Earl on League of Pissed Off Voters Radio with Walkout. And, yeah, I got one more pair of tickets here if anyone wants them for Stanton Moore Trio Friday, September 16th at the Independent with the Shotgun Wedding Quintet. Just call up now at 415-550-0511, and you can be off to see some groovy fun times next Friday night. And, yeah, now I'm going to get into that interview from a couple weeks ago I did with Gary Shee from the New York Times and the Bay Citizen talking about the mayor's race here in San Francisco. So, yeah, calling for those tickets right now, 415-550-0511. And we're going to jump into this this interview a little ways into it since we're getting close to the 8 o'clock hour here on League of Pissed Off Voters Radio.
And it didn't even make a splash.
Yeah.
And even though I, you know, a simple Google search of the sky would turn up bushes, you know, when you're walking home and say, hey, Mr., Mr. Smith,
right.
You want to come in and talk with us, for a little bit. And so they've been interviewing people.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. That's what I'm hearing. They've been interviewing people.
Oh, sorry, I came in on the wrong spot here. And jump back a little bit so we can get into it, some interesting stuff. With Gary Shee talking about the intrigue over the ongoing federal investigations into shady business at the Willie Brown administration, and wondering if any of that's going to pop up here in the couple of months before the election, with Ed Lee being pretty intimately involved in a lot of those business dealing and contracting issues of when Willie Brown was mayor. So hold on one second here.
It up out there,
yeah,
like crazy Raven dude. I mean, I've seen that guy, crazy late night warehouse parties,
right?
He's all dialed in.
All right, this is us talking about Charles Kalish, the guy who was arrested for asking questions of Ed Lee while he was filing to run for office, the 74-year-old landscape architect who took five cops to drag out of City Hall
at 75 or 74, whatever he is.
Yeah, and just like parties by night, like protests by day,
pretty much.
Dude,
yeah,
I was there literally, like,
yeah, how was
10
that scene
feet
going
away from him,
right?
And there were like four sheriff's deputies who barely were able to hold him down and like get him to move. You know, he just basically planted his feet.
Yeah.
And, they were just trying to drag him out of the place.
Uh-huh.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah. I hope when I'm 70, it takes four cops to get me out of somewhere.
Yeah, I heard he then went to Daly's, right? Like, right afterwards and got a free drink.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Yeah.
After he got out of jail, but it's been a crazy couple of weeks, man.
Yeah. So, how long you been watching the San Francisco political scene?
Well, I've only been watching it for a little bit over a year, kind of
right.
full time as my job. And so, I mean, I've been in the city for a couple of years.
Sure.
Went to school out here. I was born out here.
Cool.
But I've been kind of bouncing, you know, mm-hmm. in and out. But it's only been, you know, so I consider myself from the Bay Area, but it's only been just the past, I would say, a little bit over a year that I've been really kind of diving
right.
into some of this stuff. And it's a small town, man. I mean, we were just talking about
yeah,
this,
right? Absolutely.
It's the same movers and shakers, like, behind every,
yeah.
you know, corner.
Yeah, that's why I think everyone gets, like, every now and then someone new will pop up, or, like, there'll be some kind of, like, anonymous something or other, and everyone's like, who did that? It's got to be, you know, one of these five people or something, or...
Right.
Yeah, it's, and, you know, a lot of these fools, you look at, they've been doing it, they've been going at each other for, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, the ones that go way back, however long Willie Brown and Rose Pack have been doing their thing, and...
Right.
Yeah. So, how's it been for you of like being a reporter and getting in with trying to figure out the scoop from these people, and how willing are people? Do people like trust you more now? Do people trust you when you came in?
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I can tell you, you know, there's definitely an advantage mm-hmm. to being, you know, one of the kids who just kind of showed up a little bit newer to the scene because I don't have that kind of baggage. It's
right.
such a small city in
yeah.
terms of the politics and in terms of the press.
Right. That, you get a lot of the press, they get, you know, demonized or get classified
right.
as on one side or the other of the
exactly.
political
spectrum. And you're here for a while, you're here for a couple of years, you have your sources.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether you really kind of, you know it or not, I would say, you know, you start having, you know, a certain slant, you know, to reporting,
sure.
at least in terms of where you're getting your information from.
Right, right.
And so I think, you know, when I first started like a year ago, there was a sense that, you know, people... I mean, so, you know, I started at the beginning of the Bay Citizen when we started.
Right.
There was a sense, oh, you know, let's give these guys a shot.
Uh-huh.
You know, nobody knew who we were.
Right.
And so I think...
And you had the connection to the New York Times, I think, that gave you the big cred of...
yeah,
knowing
it gave us a nice, you know, boost right off
yeah.
the bat. But... It's just, you know, I think it's just gaining people's trust and kind of letting people know that we're going to try to play it as straight as we can. And
right.
we're not going to hold punches, but we're also not going to, you know, try to tear you down for
mm-hmm.
for no reason.
Yeah. Cool. And trying to think of, you know, what's the latest thing you've written on about the mayor's race?
Yeah, I've been stalling a little bit the last uh-huh. couple of days just because mm-hmm. there's so much going on right,
right.
now. You know, I mean... Now there's word that, you know, the U.S. attorneys might be interested in some of this stuff around Run Ed Run.
Yeah, I think the Chronicle said they got confirmation from the U.S. attorneys that they were looking into something.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the Chronicle's talked to the Justice Department yet.
Right.
But I, you know, I've spoken to two people who have been contacted by them.
Right.
Who have handed over documents.
Uh-huh.
And so we don't really know whether it's, you know, looking into this Run Ed Run draft campaign or
right.
if it's part of something bigger.
Yeah.
You know, because we do know that the feds have kind of kept this ongoing, you know, probe into city contracts for,
right.
you know, at least a year.
Mm-hmm.
And periodically, you know, they basically kind of, you know, jump out of the bushes, you know, when you're walking home and say, hey, Mr., you know, Mr. Smith, you know,
right.
you want to come in and talk with us, you know, for a little bit. And so they've been interviewing people.
Interesting. Uh-huh.
You know, so that's what I'm hearing. They've been interviewing
okay.
people here and there. But it's kind of really hard to piece together
right.
what exactly their investigation is looking into. Because
yeah.
you know, there's this whole thing with Recology,
right.
which is a city contractor. They have, like, you know, over $100 million
sure.
in city contracts. And you know, they and Edley played a role in... Because when he was on a panel of three people who, you know, selected them for this contract back
right.
in 2009. And they also helped him with his... the Run and Run campaign.
Yeah, and he gave them a higher score than the other two folks
right.
on that panel. Yeah.
Right, so there's that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, of course, there's all these kind of questions, you know, swirling around the Central Subway.
Right.
Which is, you know, a project that Rose Pack, you know, the Chinese Chamber of Commerce consultant has a lot of interests in. So, you know, we really don't know where things are right now.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, the more you dig back into that sort of Willie Brown era of city government, there's all these stories of shady contracting going on. And you know, when the first reports of the investigation into the Run Ed Rudd thing came up, there was the thing about a couple of the donors to the Run Ed Rudd being ones that had some sketchy past with city contracting. I'm trying to remember what it was. I think it was Steve Jones that wrote about those ones, about these two companies that were given city contracts after they'd been found to like not be paying the prevailing wage to their workers, but still were able to hook up contracts. And yeah, it seems like there's this whole history of sketchy business around around the Willie Brown era of contracts when he was around.
You know, that's kind of that was really kind of the what defined his term in city office. You know,
right.
I mean, on one hand, he was, you know, such a dominant and powerful mayor, at least, you know, in the first couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, what he needed to get done, he could get done.
Right.
On the other hand, the reason why he had so much power was through his ability to influence, you know, who got contracts and where city money was being directed to.
Right.
And these companies on the receiving end, in turn, were able to help, you know, put people on the streets when he needed to run for re-election or when he had some kind of a big ballot measure fight that he was expecting.
Right.
So, you know, those were some of just, you know, the defining characteristics of his tenure. And if you're looking at this Ed Lee candidacy from the perspective that, you know, he is so close to Willie, that are we really going to see a third term of Willie Brown?
Right.
You know, so then naturally those are going to be some of the issues that you're going to have to be looking at and kind of, you know, looking into some of those ties.
Right. This is League of Pissed Off Voters Radio. We're talking with Jerry Shee, the Bay Citizen, about San Francisco politics and the mayor's race and all that action. And yeah, when you talk about the sort of holdovers from the Willie Brown administration, another headline we've seen jump out of that recently is Mohamed Nuru becoming the head of Department of Public Works. And he's got those ties back where, you know, some shady allegations of him misusing funds back when he was at DPW, and then also getting city contractors to go out and campaign on city time for Gavin Newsom. And what are you hearing? Are people talking about that anymore? Is that sort of blown over? And is... I saw, you know, Bevan Dufty had a letter to the editor sort of standing up for Mohamed Nuru today in the Chronicle,
I think it was. That's the really interesting thing, you know, I mean, back when he was first appointed, the news came out maybe 2 weeks ago, and it didn't even make a splash.
Yeah.
And even though I, you know, a simple Google search of this guy would turn up, you know, I think it was Chuck Finney and Lance Williams, you know, two investigative reporters of the Chronicle back in the day, about 10 years ago, did this, you know, incredible, you know, big, you know, investigative piece looking at how this guy was really Willie Brown's foot soldier and political protege in the Bayview district. So through his nonprofit Slug, you know, he was able to turn out a lot of people who, like you said, you know, were able to kind of scour the streets as basically a ground army for, you know, Mayor Brown's you know, political efforts. And so, you know, Dennis Herrera this week came out and on the first day when Nuru began his job, came out, you know, fiercely attacking Nuru, saying this was cronyism. Why did Ed Lee appoint him to head this enormous city department with, you know, a multi-hundred-million-dollar, you know, city, you know, budget?
Yeah.
And the interesting thing for me was that nobody else really jumped in on it. And, in fact, you saw people like Bevan Dufty come in and in defense of Mr. Nuru. You had Amos Brown of the NAACP come out and even accuse Mr. Herrera of racism, saying that this was because Mr. Nuru is black.
That's what Amos Brown does,
and called for Herrera's resignation. Even though, you know, I think there are a lot of campaigns out there who do agree with some of the criticisms that Mr. Herrera has aired. You know? And so I was kind of surprised at the level of kind of silence, really, from a lot of the campaigns. And I don't know if that's because, you know, maybe they're kind of, you know, holding their punches now.
Right.
You know, saving their ammo. Or if there's some kind of a ranked choice voting strategy going on where they don't really want to appear like they're too negative.
Yeah, you know, there's always that conventional wisdom around it that
there's been so much kind of like negative kind of, you know, attacks going on right now against Ed Lee. Maybe they want to hold their fire a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it was at the debate when Leland Yee, who's probably, you know, Ed Lee's like fiercest rival in this race. I forgot the specifics, but I think he didn't really mention the words Willie Brown or Rose Pack at all, you know, when he was at the debate, when he was saying, you know, if I'm the mayor, I'm going to be my own man. I'm not going to be beholden to power brokers at City Hall.
Yeah.
And the moderator, Phil Matier of the Chronicle, asked him, well, you know, who are those people?
Uh-huh.
And he wouldn't say it. And yet, at the same time, that very day, I had Mr. Herrera on the phone.
Yeah,
and he was saying the exact same stuff, and I was saying, "Well, Dennis, you know, so you know, who are these power brokers that you're talking about?"
Yeah,
and he wouldn't say the words Willie Brown and Rose Pack, even though it's what everybody's saying.
Yeah,
right
it's
now,
in every article that's written about this stuff.
And so there's a certain sense that, you know, if they're going, if a lot of these leading campaigns right now, because Ed Lee is so dominant in public polling, you know, the latest one that we've seen was just, you know, was still, I think, you know, is still 2 weeks old. It showed Ed Lee before he jumped in the race at about 35%. You know, so he's, and the nearest competitors are about 10%.
Yeah.
He's so far ahead of everybody right now that really kind of, you know, a lot of the campaigns are telling me the only way they have a shot is if, you know, five of these leading campaigns all team up and basically stick a picture of Willie Brown and Rose Pack on Ed Lee's forehead. From now until November 8th. And just say, you know, Willie Brown, those two words are coming out of their mouths like every 5 seconds.
Exactly.
And that's the only way that they could even remotely have a chance of bringing Ed down to about the same level. I mean, that's probably even a stretch. But within striking distance, and then on November 8th, let, you know, just basically roll the dice with RCV and just see how it shakes out. But at the moment, you know, it looks like, you know, some of these campaigns, maybe they're, you know, holding their fire. They're not willing to, you know, really go 100%. And I think Ed is looking in great shape.
Yeah, like it seemed like there was that initial volley, like starting off with the Castro Theater debate, where everyone just came guns blazing on him and the crowd's booing. And
were you there? I actually was at the Ethics Commission.
No, I missed that one too. I was just watching it on the Twitter feed, basically, and just like hearing what everyone was saying about it. It sounds like it was chaos. And then everyone's like, "Oh, we went too far," and they like pulled it back a little bit. But you know, then you had at the next debate, David Chu asking Ed Lee about, you know, when we were in my office, or when I met in your office, you were saying, you know, I don't want to run, but Rose and Willie are telling me, are putting a lot of pressure on me. And then, like, Ed, like, kind of apparently got, like, bristled at that. I don't know if you were at that debate. And, yeah, it seemed like then after that, it was like people started to realize, oh, we're pushing too hard and we're going to, like, it's going to look bad on us. So we got to, like, ease up on it and do it, like, a little more subtly or something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have had, you know, I think one or two kind of press events. I mean, one thing I've heard out of, you know, Chinatown in particular, you know, is kind of people feeling a little bit like, you know, now everybody's calling for investigations into Run Ed Run. And there's just a lot of bad press, a lot of bad blood. Mudslinging going on, and you know, for a lot of people in the Chinese community, Ed Lee still represents, I mean, you know, he's an icon, you know, the first Chinese mayor of San Francisco. He's a huge point of pride. It's almost kind of like the 2008 Olympics in Beijing in a way, you know, where it's like, okay, yes, there are all these issues, but this is still something that, like, is really close to our hearts. And so I think there's a lot of people in the Chinese community who kind of take that a little bit personally, you know. It's like you're criticizing, you know, this mayor that means quite a lot to us. But I mean, and just speaking of the Castro Theater, what I thought was really interesting was, you know, I talked to people who, I guess, you know, was really up close and said the guy was just sweating bullets. I mean, the mayor was just sweating bullets, like, going into the debate.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I can't really confirm that, but I totally believe it.
I've heard that also.
You just got to put yourself into this guy's head for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this isn't somebody who, you know, started his political career at age, you know, 25, running for the school board of, like, you know, Vacaville, or, you know what I mean?
Sure, it's like, he wasn't in the Young Democrats, he wasn't in all that crap.
He wasn't in all of that, you know? Yeah. And the first campaign of his life,
right,
he has the entire, like, political circles painting him as, you know, Willie Brown's man and Rose Pack's man, two of the most polarizing political figures in the city.
Yeah.
That's a tremendous burden.
Yeah, I think that's the one wild card. And, like, you know, Ed starts off with this huge advantage over everybody else, but he's untested. He's never been, like, under the microscope like this. He's never had people taking shots at him. And
how's he going
to
hold up?
Yeah, what kind of jaw does he have? Is he going to be able to keep his cool, or is he going to lose it? And that's
Yeah, and so the way I see it, you know, a lot of these attacks on him right now, you know, about, like, oh, you didn't keep your promise or whatever. Yeah. I don't really see that as sticking. You know,
the
public sees him very favorably,
right?
And he is indeed a very competent executive. You know, city executive.
Sure,
you know, he got a lot of these deals done. What he said about kind of bringing in this tone of civility to City Hall was in fact true.
Uh-huh.
You know, he passed the budget, you know, appointed the police chief, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, is genuinely commendable.
Sure.
You know, I forgot where I was going with that.
All right, we'll get back to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's,
yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, like the thing about him breaking his promise, I think it seems like that resonates with some people.
Right.
A lot of people don't really care so much.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Exactly. So that's what I was saying. And so the public, they care, I think, more about that than kind of, you know, political promises he made to a couple politicians.
Uh-huh.
But where these attacks, I was saying, from these other campaigns, I think may have an effect.
Right.
Is kind of testing his. You know, testing him mentally.
Yeah.
You know, if he has the stomach to really go all the way.
Yeah.
You know, because he's a completely untested candidate.
Right.
And most people think that this guy's going to make all the mistakes that he could possibly make,
you know,
on the campaign trail between now and November.
Yeah.
And if you can get into his head.
Right.
You know, you don't know what could happen, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something I heard, that he's been traveling around to these debates with, like, a huge old entourage of cops. I don't know if you've seen that, or I think it was H. Brown mentioned him, you know, rolling out with, like, 15 cops around him or something and halting traffic. And that's pretty surprising, where, you know, before it was, like, Ed Lee, like, oh, I don't need any cops. I'm just going to drive my, you know, beat-up hoopty Camry up and, you know, get along fine. And then now if he's bringing in the Secret Service and shutting everyone down, and if he's going to have that bubble of executive privilege around him, it'll be interesting to see how that how he's able to maintain that, or if that's going to, like, become an issue as well, of him not wanting to deal with people.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that. You know, I mean, I've definitely seen a lot of these cops at some of these debates. I don't know what it's about. You know, if it's like a city side decision, or if it was campaign side people, you know.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, you know, Gavin always rolled deep.
Right.
And the thing that people liked about Ed was that, you know, he would just, you know, show up in that Ford Focus.
Yeah.
You know, with his driver and one other guy and maybe a press person.
Totally.
But I don't know. You know, we'll have to see how he handles some of this.
Yeah. Ed Lee's getting into the big time. It's the honeymoon is over. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting couple of months here.
Yep.
And, this is League of Pissed Off Voters every Friday, 6 to 8 p.m., talking with Jerry Shee of the Bay Citizen about San Francisco's political scene. And I don't know, maybe take a quick break and catch your breath and come back and talk a little more. You got to get out of here anytime soon.
No, I'm here, man.
Cool. Well, we got another 25 minutes or so. Let me throw a quick tune on. In the background, you've been hearing the sounds of the Beats Antique. And then here's something from Toon Yard, something I just came across on, I think, the SF Weekly blog. Had a link to this one. Her track, Gangsta, and it's been remixed by Ad Rock from the Beastie Boys. I haven't had a chance to listen to this one, so
nice.
Here you come. Toon Yard's on League of Pissed Off Voters Radio.
Gangsta.
just going to fade that one out here. League of Pissed Off Voters, that was a little taste of the Fresh and Onlys with Waterfall. And before that, the Ad Rock remix of Toon Yard's Gangsta. And if you go over to SF Weekly, their All Shook Down blog, I think you can find a link to download that track. And yeah, this is DJ Spider here with Jerry Shee of the Bay Citizen, and just talking about San Francisco politics. And so yeah, man, I didn't realize you went to Stanford. I was just looking at your little bio thing. I should have to like put down a bet on the big game. I was went to Cal.
Oh, so, you went to Cal?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, man. You know, Andrew Luck back another year.
That's true. That's not going to be looking so good for the Bears probably coming.
That was a decision like I couldn't really understand. You know what I mean?
About going back to school.
Giving up that number one pick. But I don't know. You know what I mean? With the lockout and all that stuff.
That was probably a big part of it. Yeah.
You know, maybe it was just ride it all out and play well, and I don't know. I mean, there's a chance, maybe the Niners, with Jim Harbaugh, snap them up.
Yeah, which could be as bad as the Niners are looking this year. It looks like they could be looking at that number one pick.
You're gonna watch that Battle of the Bay on us?
I'm at least gonna tape it if I don't watch it live, and yeah, I'll check it out. I don't know.
You Niners fan?
Yeah, born and raised. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You know, I'm Raiders fan too, but I'm more of a Niners fan. I never could like get all that into the Niners Raiders rivalry, but. How about you? Are you
I mean, I was in the Bay Area a little bit, kind of in the early 90s.
Yeah, okay.
And, that definitely rubbed off on me. I mean, I was never, like, hardcore.
Right.
But, I don't know, I mean, were you, you must have been around at the time, right?
Yeah, like, I was a kid when we had, it was, like, the Montana Glory days. And,
right.
You know, there was, like, the Junior 49er Club, and, they bus us up, grew up in the South Bay, and, bus us up a couple games a year, get the checkout games, sit in the end zone, yeah. And yeah, I was saw a couple of playoff games as the whenever it was with Steve Young or not Steve Young it was who's the one after Steve Young with Terrell Owens when they beat the Packers in the playoffs. Remember that was like one of the highlights of one of the best games I saw. But
yeah, how old were you then? You were
that was like when I was
high school.
I was like just out of college, I guess. That was like late 90s. So
okay,
yeah, but. Yeah, I mean, that was, we used to go out, like, at halftime, in elementary school, go out and play Jerry Rice and Joe Montana, and, yeah, that was what turned me on to football.
Heroes, right?
Yeah, when they were revolutionizing football, and it's been a long, cold winter for the Niners, though, man. It's rough these days. They're not looking so hot.
Yeah, well, we'll see how Harbaugh shakes out, with
the
system and everything. I mean, I just heard, Vernon Jordan, say how he's just, just so like mind-boggled right now with everything. And
yeah, it's the challenge. They haven't had much time to learn the system.
But give them a year. Give them 2 years. See how it works out.
Hopefully, if they can keep some patience with it and get some get some people in there. Yeah. So, but yeah, I guess back to the political scene. What else is going on? I guess the other big neutron bomb was Jeff Adachi jumping into the mayor's race. And did you have an idea that was happening, or was that
no idea? Nobody did.
Right.
I mean, my colleague Elizabeth Stevens probably has been covering this pension thing closer than anybody in the city. I mean, she's literally been doing that like full time.
Right.
And it just sprung on her, everybody else. And to hear Adachi say it, obviously there's tons of conspiracy theorists out there who say that leading back to a year ago, the whole pension reform thing has always been this Trojan horse,
to elevate
his name all over the city and have everybody know who he is and what he's fighting for, what his platform is. But to hear him say it. He says it was literally a decision he made on Friday morning. The thing was, I was at that debate on Thursday. Melissa Griffin, the Examiner columnist,
who
moderated the debate, handed out to everybody these little cards.
Yeah, the yes-no cards.
Yes-no cards, one on each side, said, do you support Ed Lee's pension deal? Versus Adachi's pension deal, and everybody said yes. Literally everybody on the stage said yes.
Yeah, and that's so right. And Tony Hall wasn't there, the one semi-major candidate who would go against it. Yeah.
And so I think Adachi was just like, screw this. Like, I'm in.
Right.
And how it shakes up the race, I don't really know. Especially with, ranked choice voting.
Exactly,
There's a lot of questions out there. does it help or hurt your guy?
Right.
Avalos.
Yeah, that's
really
a big question.
I can kind of see, you know, I've heard arguments on both sides. I mean, right. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I'm just scratching my head about this whole thing right now. It's like, there's so many freaking variables in this thing. It's like three card Monty with, you know, three dimensional chess at the same time or something.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's like 2 years ago, Jeff Adachi was the guy that I was hoping was going to run for mayor and that I thought had the best chance of being a real people powered candidate and being the progressive standard bearer. And that was like before he went off on like chasing this white whale of pension reform and just burned every bridge between himself and the unions and most of the progressive community of San Francisco. And so, you know, we've had him on the show a couple of times. He was like a guest bartender when we had like a fundraiser for the League of Pissed Off
Voters.
What
was that like?
Oh, it was fucking awesome, man. It was, you know, Chris Daly, Jane Kim, Jeff Adachi, and Broke-Ass Stewart.
Broke-Ass Stewart,
he was like the wild card. We just like, can't have it all politicians. Threw him in there. They're at Elixir. And, you know.
Who made the best drinks?
I think Daly, you know, he's got the history as a bartender. But, you know, Adachi was working hard. You know, Jane kind of like did it for an hour or so and then kind of like, then kind of pieced out a little bit. And, you know, like Broke-Ass Stewart was just like, he was sort of happy to be along. But yeah, Jeff was, I think Jeff kind of, actually he kind of vanished halfway through the night too, but he started out strong.
Yeah, I mean, I could kind of see him. I could almost kind of see him, you know, because he's just like really like, I feel like he's pretty like straight-laced guy, right? He's pretty like straight-edged guy.
It seems like it, but.
But, you know, he's got that like hair. I feel like, you know, I could see him, you know, with like a little apron on at Alembic or something.
Right. No, he was like, he took off his, like, he had like a tight white t-shirt on. He took off his shirt. He's got like a tattoo like peeking out of his t-shirt.
Really?
Yeah. Adachi's got some tats. And
my God.
Yeah. And he was cool, dude. He, you know, I mean, dude is ripped. Like, he's like, he's like, he looks kind of like skinny and stuff, but
he's swole, man.
Yeah, he's got some strength to him. And yeah, man, he's, I don't know.
But he had a lot of young people kind of behind him, too. Because I guess, I mean, when was his first campaign when he took down, that was 2000, what?
That was before I got into the game, so I think that was, it might have been 2004. That was, so when is Public Defender, what's the schedule on that? It would have been on one of the odd years, I think, so it was probably, is it on the, or maybe it was 2001? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Because it's like the mayor and sheriff, and then like, are on one cycle, and then DA and Public Defender, so maybe it was 2001 or 2005?
Well, DA is the same.
Yeah.
Is it? I don't know.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that was, like, he was the big progressive hope then. And, you know, when he was taking on the fight against the gang injunctions, I know that was when, you know, a lot of people around the mission, at least, like, really got behind Jeff Adachi's back, where he was going, you know, backing up the kids that were trying to get out of these gang injunctions.
So what do you think, man? I mean, at this point, you know, how do a lot of, like, the younger progressives view him?
Yeah, it seems like a mix. I mean, I think there's more sympathy for him in the younger progressive community than, you know, you look at sort of like the kingmakers and the dealmakers of, you know, the elected officials and the party bosses and the union bosses, and those guys are like, fuck Jeff Adachi, we're done with him. He, like, he screwed us, and, you know, labor for sure is ready to spit on his grave.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it seems like, from what I've heard of the couple of debates they've been there, it seems like him and John Avalos have been, you know, a little bit friendly with each other. You know, like, John, I think, lobbed Adachi, like, a softball question at one of the debates.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, I mean, it's... I think there's some question about, like, how progressive Jeff Adachi really is. It's like, you know, the public defender by nature is a pretty progressive position. You're defending the poor and the powerless. But, yeah, where does he stand on other issues? You know, there's people talked about that he's, you know, been kind of buddies with PG&E, and he's got some PG&E backing, and maybe he's not as progressive as he seems, but...
When
you look at the rest of these cast of characters, no one else I really see is, like, standing up on progressive ideals.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he definitely needs to, his record definitely needs to be scrubbed just like everybody else.
Right.
You know, but the thing is right now, it's kind of interesting. I was telling this to somebody, to a KPFA reporter the other day, about how, you know, with Ed Lee getting in the race, it's just sucked the oxygen out of the room.
Exactly.
Because, you know, all the reporters, I mean, everybody is basically looking at what is in this guy's record, what's in his background, right? And so we're not really scrutinizing you know, Dennis Herrera and Leland Yee and David Chu and Bevin Duffy and Jeff Adachi, like we really should be. You know, all the news organizations were stretched pretty tight.
Exactly. You know, investigative budgets, I'm sure, have been slashed hugely. Don't have the time.
I mean, you know, at the Chronicle, you know, the old, like, you know, Lance Williams, Chuck Finney, Susan Sword, those guys, you know, aren't there anymore.
Right.
You know? And so, like, there's a lot of these other candidates, and, you know, we just know for a fact, really, that there's so much shadiness out there.
Right.
That, like, you know, we haven't gotten around to, but hopefully, you know, we're definitely gonna, you know, try to carve out some space and some time to get around to that before you know the election, and give everybody the exam that, you know, that they need to be given.
But yeah, I mean, what's your sense of, like, what does Jeff Adachi do to the race, and, you know, where does he line up with it? I mean, he seems like he's got these weird polar opposites, where he's got, you know, the progressive history that I'm sure is going to get him some votes, if people, at least, you know, second place votes, of people who know him as a progressive. And then he's got this, you know, hardcore, you know, fuck the unions, pension reform side to him. And
I don't know. I mean, you know, does it help? I mean, yeah, exactly. And you know, people like Michael Moritz,
right?
The
Silicon venture
Valley
capitalist,
investor.
Uh huh.
You know, those guys will probably throw down a lot of cash, you know, in, I don't know, you know, independent money or you know, for his campaign. I think he'll do fine financially.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a lot of votes, you know, last year on Prop B.
Right.
You know, they got killed relatively.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, if that, those,
I mean, that was
votes,
what, 45, 55 or something they lost? Something
right,
like that?
Right, I think it was like 44, 56.
So, you know, in that terms, it's a substantial loss, but they got freaking carpet bombed by millions of dollars
paid against them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if even like half of those votes were converted into, you know, a first choice or second choice, you know, RCV, you know, vote for him as mayor.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he has a base. I mean, so
exactly.
You know, when Labor says that, you know, the Prop B last year was a Trojan horse for the guy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, whether it was or it wasn't, it sure as hell, you know, gave him a big boost.
Yeah, that would be something interesting to go through, like, the Prop B spending records and see what they spent their money on, if they were doing, like, voter ID and phone banking stuff. And I wonder if they, like, built up a list. They have, you know, 10,000 IDs that are, like, hardcore, fuck yeah, screw the union guys, that they can go back to and turn right into Adachi voters. That would be something.
I mean, you know, I haven't actually, you know, looked at any of the materials from the time, but, I mean, that's a great point. You know, did every piece the mail that go out for Prop B have, like, you know, Jeff Adachi's, like, face on it? You know what I mean?
If
like the dude's mug is all over the city, you know, on pension reform, then you know something's probably
And I don't feel like, what I remember of the Prop B stuff, I don't feel like I saw it as, like, Adachi fluff pieces. It seemed like it was pretty straightforward stuff.
I don't know, you know, and so far my impression of him is he's a pretty straight shooter, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, after all of this, he still seems like he's, I think you can't confuse that with his being shrewd.
Exactly.
He's extremely shrewd politically, I think. He's really smart. He knows all the angles.
Right.
He holds his cards, like, extremely close to his chest.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to a guy like John, you know?
Right.
Like, I mean, you know, John
wears his heart on his sleeve.
I'm telling you, you know, from a perspective of a reporter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I can get him to, I'm just like, listen, John, I just want to know, you know, what's on your mind. And,
yeah,
you know, like, he'll say it. With Jeff, like, you can't get an inch, you know, you can't get anything out of him.
And I think that's the difference between, you know, a lawyer and a social worker, I guess.
An organizer, right?
Yeah.
And so, but at the same time, my impression has always been that, you know, that Jeff, you know, there's not a whole lot of shadiness. I mean, we'll see.
Right.
You know? I mean, if there's any time that this stuff is going to come out, it's going to be now. So
yeah, exactly.
So we'll see.
And you'll have lots of money spent on opposition research by the various campaigns that'll be looking to dump stuff in your guy's lap, I'm sure.
I mean, we'll look out for you know, Ed Lee's people too. You know, I mean, he's got the best of the best when it comes to dirt diggers.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
yeah, it's going to be a shit show for the next 3 months. Interesting. What do we got? Like 2.5 months left now? It's like September, October, and
80-something days?
80-something days,
I don't know. Maybe 70-something days? I'm not sure.
Yeah. It seemed like it was way out there, and, like, all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, it's about to get bonkers in this town.
I know. Do you think we'll have another couple days of late summer, Indian summer, hot.
You know, I'm hoping that global warming hasn't totally messed up the San Francisco weather, and we'll have that glorious September, October Indian summer. Yeah, this summer has been brutal. But
did you get out at all?
I was out in Boston for a week on like a little family vacation. Got some sunny days out there. That was nice.
And, I've never been Boston. I've only been to Boston been like first week times. Of January.
Uh huh. That probably wasn't that nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I heard it's beautiful out there in the summer, though.
Yeah, it was real nice. It was, you know, 70s, 80s, and a little bit of humidity, but not too much. And, yeah, just some nice soaking into your bones warmth. And Yeah. You got any plans? You getting
out? All right, I'm going to fade out the interview here. And when we get into talking about the weather, that's probably about time to go. League of Pissed Off Voters here on Mutiny Radio every Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. That was a rebroadcast of an interview I did with Gary Shee of the Bay Citizen in the New York Times, talking about San Francisco politics and the election for mayor and all that kind of stuff from a few weeks ago. And big thanks to David Morse from the Indy Bay Independent Journalist, who we talked to earlier about the protest at BART on Thursday, where he, along with a bunch of other journalists, were detained by the BART police and a bunch of protesters seemingly illegally. And, yeah, gave us a rundown on just all the messed up stuff our BART police are doing for us out there. So, this is it for League of Pissed Off Voters. Hopefully going to have a return of DJ King Caligula next Friday, taking the wheels, and then going to be back in 2 weeks with Greg Dewar from the End Judah Chronicles, talking about Muni and Muni stuff, political stuff, little this, little that. And I think in one of those weeks we're going to be debuting the League of Pissed Off Voters endorsements for the November election. So stay tuned for all that. And I'm going to throw maybe one more bluegrass track at you here on the way out of town. And let's see, here's something from Steve Earle. And then this is the Graveyard Shift on League of Pissed Off Voters Radio on Mutiny Radio.
See me some lonely night.